So, at these early stages of recovery, self-management becomes extremely important from the perspective of the coach. So, self-management and the group that we have under the category of self-management, so this idea of being non-directive, non-coercive, being aware of priming, the way that language is used, your use of language, and also listening for language use by your client. The transparency aspect, where we as coaches don't attempt to kind of hide or mask reactions in the real time of the coaching session, but integrate them and offer them in a appropriate self-managed transparent way. Then we have to manage our ethics and ethical considerations, particularly when we are hearing things from our clients that might be a combination of both a primed piece of information that has also got ethical components. We're managing our inner responses, the triggering that I've just mentioned, and of course, self-management is about being embodying compassion and being compassionate in an appropriate sense. And there is, if you like, an appropriate compassion and an inappropriate response to compassion, which is important. So, what is it about self-management that is particularly important at this point in the work that you're doing with the client? In early recovery, as we've said, we know this is a turbulent time, and so therefore there's lots of opportunities for us to be triggered, provoked, evoked, and invited to try to exert ourselves in service of our clients in a way that is not appropriate and is not necessarily in service of them, and certainly would be more about trying to calm or manage our own emotional response as opposed to being there in service of them. This is a time when we are most likely to find our emotional world jostled. And stirred up, particularly when people are extremely, of course, scared, frightened, anxious, or angry, or so on, very emotional about what's going on. For someone who's been diagnosed with a serious healthcare challenge, they will almost certainly have an anxiety that this is going to terminate or end their life earlier than they expected. They may not know what the outcome of this challenge is. They may not know how it's going to play out. So there will be an existential dimension to the coaching or their presence in the coaching that may be articulated by them in a very powerful and emotional way, or maybe something that they're trying to not even think about. They might be trying to keep it behind closed doors. They're trying to defend themselves against the emotions that come with thinking about it. So these are turbulent and challenging times for the coach. At this time as well, there is almost certainly going to be the desire for solutions to be found. There can be like a fix me feeling that's coming out of the client. I've come to you, coach, tell me what to do. They're looking for solutions in the same way that they would engage with a medical model practitioner who they would be looking for a cure from or a treatment from, which is completely understandable. That's why we go to doctors, because they make a diagnosis and then they offer us a remedy or a cure that may or may not work, or treatment program that may or may not work. However, of course, our coaching is not built on this model. We are not there. We don't do diagnosis and we don't do remedial treatment work. It is not that kind of relationship. So one of the challenges you're going to have is to help your client understand that what you offer is something different, that you actually offer an alliance with them to support them in this reconfiguring of their life and this meeting this challenge that they have, and that what you actually are offering them is supportive to their engagement with this change and this engagement with the medical model practitioners, if that's appropriate, rather than being one of those people who delivers that kind of intervention. You will have to navigate your way around their response to the knowledge of how coaches work, and perhaps a sense of disappointment that they may feel that you aren't going to be able to offer them the solution that they may be urgently seeking at that time. So it's important that you are ready and prepared to navigate your way through that. It is precisely because clients often have been in crisis and wondered what to do. They've often gone around saying to people, what should I do? And people, being people, have been very quick to give them advice. Most people that I've worked with who've come to me for to develop their recovery to wellness journeys really don't need anyone else giving them advice or telling them what to do. And yet part of them will sometimes even elicit it, try to get it out of you. And it's important that the coach doesn't kind of fall into this trap of being starting to respond to this idea, however subtly, that their client wants to tell them what to do. The real focus of the development of recovery to wellness is about the client's own resources and their own inner wisdom and ability they have and will develop with you, we hope, to actually answer these kinds of questions for themselves. This doesn't mean that they don't have systems of support in their life from which they gain support, and some of that support might be to, in a structured way, ask for advice and feedback. But you are not, as their coach, that primary resource that gives that kind of advice, certainly not in our framework. Once your client understands that actually you're going to offer them something different, and that something different is to allow them to be present with everything that they are without any judgment that you're going to place on them, without you seeking to push them in any one particular direction, going to allow them the dignity and self-respect of being self-determining, once they realize that you're offering something quite different and they adjust to that, then the relationship can start to be differently configured and to become quite powerful. So it's important that we are aware that these kinds of dynamics might come into play. There is another dynamic that can often turn up, which is, if you like, almost the opposite of that. It can be a kind of defiant testing stance where people who are in crisis become very anxious about who they're talking to and can have quite high levels of mistrust. This is particularly true in some of the areas where people have been through treatment systems for things like mental health, anxiety disorders, substance misuse, alcohol misuse, and so on, drug misuse. A lot of those systems are highly prescriptive to people, and because there's so much stigmatization attached to these kinds of healthcare problems, they are often very wary and defended around people who have, offering them, if you like, help or support, because often that support is actually coming from a diagnosis, advice-giving place. So it's particularly important to be aware that if you get clients who come to you who've got those kinds of experiences, important to be aware that they may well actually be waiting to see who you actually are and what you actually are all about. And so there might be that, could call it a testing phase, if you like, where they are sort of testing to see what you're made of and what being their coach is all about. Again, what you need to be doing is sticking to your framework and model and approach and saying, well, okay, you understand that. And so working with them to create a conversational space with them that will allow them to slowly navigate to some other places of that are going to be useful for them. Managing ourselves, if you are a coach who has got the element of being a peer in the context of a healthcare challenge. So what that means is if you are working with a client, for instance, who has had or is in the throes of having the same challenge as you, may have had in your life previously. So, for instance, perhaps you had a healthcare challenge, perhaps you had or have type 2 diabetes and you're a coach, or perhaps you had a problem with alcohol and now you've dealt with that, or perhaps you had mental health difficulties yourself at some other time in your life and you came through that. Could be that one of the reasons why you want to be a recovery to wellness coach is precisely because you've had that experience and you want to be a part of helping other people to transition through those experiences, which is absolutely fantastic and understandable. However, there is a jeopardy to this, because it means that you are even more likely to be stimulated and provoked into wanting to be prescriptive to the clients who are going to bring to you, if you like, your own story, particularly around the emotional content, where you may find your own emotional content brought in, brought up, recalled, and so on. Inside you, and you're going to have to manage that. Peerness, this kind of peerness is a wonderful thing and can be a great gift for your clients. But it also ups the ante, if you like, for self-management from the coach, from you, because you are going to have to manage your own personal lived experience responses within the coaching relationship. So it's important, again, to be mindful that sometimes a good fit between a coach and a client may not necessarily be someone who has an identical healthcare challenge and story to you. I'd like to talk now a little bit about compassion. So there's a definition of compassion in this document, which is sympathetic consciousness of others' distress together with a desire to alleviate it. Consciousness of another's distress. So we all have this ability to be conscious of human distress with other people. It's the empathetic bond. It's the fact that we instinctively can read emotional signatures in people's physical condition. All sorts of signals come through around the way that people are moving, the energy they feel, the tone of their voice, and so on. So all of that means that we are going to be aware of their suffering. And what will happen is that we will feel, we'll enter into a linked condition with them where we are empathetically responding. I think we've talked previously about this is a primed response. It's almost impossible for human beings to not have that response. The real question is, what do we do with that response? I.e., what is our response as coaches to that response? Now, of course, we mostly wish to alleviate it. And I say mostly wish to alleviate it because it isn't necessarily the case that we always would want to or should even want to alleviate other people's suffering. This is a controversial point of view. I can understand, in a way, listening to me say that, but consider the idea that the process of distress is going to be is a feature of a person's life when they are in this stage of trying to navigate from one place to another. It is one of the reasons why they wish to move from one place to another, because they wish to reduce their own suffering or their own perceived or anticipated suffering. So we cannot strip suffering out as if we had a magic wand. We cannot say to somebody that we have the power, if you like, to alleviate their suffering. And indeed, it could be that philosophically we could say the only person who can alleviate an individual's suffering is the person themselves. So notwithstanding the fact that there are also so many different kinds of experiences of suffering, there's the physical suffering, pain in the body, and then of course there is the suffering emotionally. There is the suffering, if you like, existentially, which can arise as well. So we don't want to immediately, through our compassionate response or our empathetic bond, suddenly find ourselves thinking we must solve this person's suffering, that is our role to somehow alleviate it and take responsibility for it. So what can we do? Well, what we can do, of course, is first of all accept that it is there, and so not disconnect from it. So we can practice the skill in coaching of being with somebody. So it's being with them in that place, knowing that that's their experience, us having some of that associated experience because of the empathetic bond. But it's actually making the decision to not try to do anything with it, to not try and fix something, certainly to not try and fix them, certainly to not try to make this feeling go away. One of the big problems about emotional contagion, if you like, is that if we can't, when we can't be with our emotions and we are with someone who is having that emotion, we want to sort of shut that emotion down because of how it's making us feel. So that's why you hear people typically say things like, you don't need to feel like this, and sort of really there's an energy that they're bringing forth which is really more about trying to shut the emotional content down. What we know about emotions, and we're going to explore this in one of the later sections where we're going to talk specifically for a bit and look at coaching and emotions. What we know about emotions is that they don't always last forever. They change, they transform, they move, they shift. They're an energy. And so our primary role as coaches is to create a space where all of this kind of energy is welcome and present. So it's important that we have our compassion, that we recognize our compassion. It is probably almost certainly because you're a compassionate person that you are even in the role that you're in, that you're doing the work that you're doing, that you are willing to work with people who are having these life experiences. But it is also the case that we need to really think about our own responses and make sure that we are very keenly aware of how we are expressing our response to the compassion that we feel with our clients, particularly when they are experiencing distress.